Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 8th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. So, Mariah, President Donald Spanky Trump ran for the high office that he now embarrassingly holds by talking about draining the swamp and how he was going to get rid of all the corruption and all the nasty people down in Washington. And he made a lot of hay on that, and a lot of people bought the line. Once he got into office, he appointed a whole bunch of swamp creatures, but one of them was a guy named Scott Pruitt. You ever heard of Scott Pruitt?
Gosh, Scott Pruitt.
Well, little Scotty boy. He has been in the news this week for several things. And I guess I should say that, for all I know, he could be the ex-administrator of the EPA by the time this podcast is posted, given the speed at which the things happen around the White House of the guy that's in there now, right? So, but tell me, Mariah, tell me the first 10 bad things you can think of that Scott Pruitt has done recently, then I'll give you another 10 bad things he's done.
Oh my gosh, I know. Well, wow, for starters, certainly he just completely he's destroyed the CAFE standards, right? The corporate average fuel fuel economy standards,
yes.
I think.
Combined average fuel efficiency. Combined average fleet efficiency. Yeah.
Which is, you know, just terrible on so many levels, not least of which that, you know, 90% of Americans want increased fuel efficiency. So this is just idiotic.
Well, so let's just stay with that for a minute, because that's an interesting place to begin. So the CAFE standard is a standard that the acronym stands for Combined Average Fleet Efficiency, which means that you take all the cars that you sell as a company of Ford or Toyota, you take them all and you take the average of all those. So you have some low mileage, high miles per gallon, some low miles per gallon, but you have to average out to the combined average of your fleet of cars. And after the 2008 financial crash, when Barack Obama, you know, God bless his name, when Barack Obama came in, he basically jawboned the automobile companies and said, if you want to be saved from destruction by the federal government and take this huge loan, in particular GM, I'm sure you remember, right? You must agree to this CAFE standard of 55 miles per gallon by the year 2025. And GM accepted that, among other companies, right? And it is that 55 mile per gallon target that these corporations agreed to with President Obama in order to get the bailout funds in 2018. Now, all of a sudden, with Scott Pruitt, we decide that's really kind of harsh on the company, the car makers, and we should let that go. Right? Is that kind of the story?
I mean, yeah, and you know what? I'm sort of like, you know, what's harsh on the car makers in America are when all of the other car makers in the world, who, by the way, most of them have a target to get rid of all gasoline-powered vehicles by 2040, 2030, or 2025. You know, what's going to be hard on American car makers is when nobody will buy their cars, and we are buying cars from made
China.
All over the world. Yeah, that are you know, fuel efficient. You know, like I said, 90% of Americans want increased fuel efficiency. That's the first thing I look at when I'm buying a car. What's going to cost me less at the pump? You know.
And go ahead.
Yeah, and so it's just we're not going to be able to keep up, and we're going to need another bailout for the car industry when you know.
You're saying that in the long term, this is it's bad for the industry to be let off the hook, right? They need to be driven because the rest of the world is going to more fuel efficient cars. If we're making clunkers here, they're not going to, despite whatever Trump wants to do with tariffs to China, we're not going to sell any cars in China if all they are is gas guzzlers.
Right. I mean, regulations force innovation. And, you know, this has been forcing automobile companies to try to make their cars more efficient. And that's what the market wants. And you know, China, India, France, Britain, and Norway all have plans to ban the production and sale of vehicles powered by fossil fuels. So
So I guess one of the other interesting aspects of this CAFE standard thing that Scott Pruitt, by the way, announced with only Fox News reporters present and all the other people banned from the room, right? The other aspect of this is California, right? So California in 1969, I guess, back in the days when Los Angeles was a brown, ugly haze all the time, the smog in Los Angeles was known nationwide. LA was given the opportunity to set its, not LA, California, given the opportunity to set a more aggressive fuel efficiency standard for cars sold in California as a special exemption. And that is at stake in this CAFE, this thing that Scott Pruitt has done. So, of course, California is suing the EPA over the relaxation of the CAFE standards because California wants to maintain a higher mile per gallon target. And of course, the other part of that special exemption for California is that other states can follow it. So, of course, Massachusetts does, I think New York does. So many of the big urban states in the country agree with California and would represent something like a third of the cars being sold. So one of the things that the Scott Pruitt and his cohort is going to have to do is somehow remove the exemption that California has to set its own targets. And that would be a terrible thing if the EP if Trump decides to deny California the right to have its own efficiency standards. And there's a huge court case coming up, right? That's going to be a big battle.
Yeah, right. I mean, because this is we're talking about, you know, air pollution, right? We're talking about people's lives, people's ability to, you know, not have air pollution related deaths. I mean, India's, you know, going for no gasoline powered cars by 2030 because their air is choked. They can't breathe over there, and they know that it's important. So,
So
in
this cafe thing is just an abomination, and Scott Pruitt is smilingly leading the charge on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that. Tell me another bad thing that Scott Pruitt did.
The list is so
The list is
long.
so long.
So then, you know, this is terrible. The he instructed his staffers that all of his staff at the EPA to tell the public there's no scientific consensus about the role of human activity in climate change, which is, I mean, even the fossil fuel companies are now saying, right, that we talked about a case in a couple podcasts ago where the fossil fuel companies are saying, yes, we know that humans have caused climate change. We accept that, right? And here you have the head of the EPA
The
saying,
EPA, right?
right, environmental protection, like saying that there's, you know, giving his staff these talking points and,
Which
you know,
basically
and
smooth over are very ambiguous about the effect of humans on climate, right? I mean, it's just they're these
Right.
deliberate talking points to avoid the bald statements.
Right. I mean, he's sent a list of eight things that they're that the staffers are publicly allowed to say about climate change. And guess what? No surprise. They're sort of about, oh, well, we're not really sure what climate change is, what's going to happen from climate change, and we're not really sure how much of it's, you know, what's causing it or whether human activity really causes it. So, you know, here, these are people look to the EPA for guidance on these issues. And here we have the EPA saying we're not sure about science that is completely sure.
I mean, and so there's an underpinning to all of this is an ongoing effort to throw scientists out of the EPA, off of advisory boards. I mean, the list is too long to encompass in anything less than an hour and a half lecture, right? That the destruction of the ability of the EPA. So, for example, one of the things they want to do, right? One of the things they want to do is to change the regulations. And it's with this Orwellian statement that the data has to be transparent for environmental regulations. And what
Oh,
they, and yeah, that's
that's
exactly the right.
insane.
So on the face of it, any data that's used to make a health regulation has to be available for the public review, which on the face of it, you say, yeah, that makes sense, right? But the problem is that many of the health, many of the regulations that concern health are driven by medical data that is held by private citizens that the researchers cannot reveal because it's personal information of the people that got sick, right? And so the fact that that data cannot be used to support regulations means you're not going to have the regulations. Or conversely, all that data is going to be made available to Exxon or some pharmaceutical company or Monsanto or someone who can then pick apart. Of course, you can take someone's data and pick apart. You can embarrass anyone, but if you go through their data and try and make a case as to why it's wrong, these things, in the name of transparency, it's an attempt to allow the corporations to distort the data on which regulations are made. And it's, again, an abomination that.
One of the things they say is, climate change prevention comes with a lot of, you know, near-term economic costs. So we're better to be safe than sorry. The EPA says this kind of generally in their talking points. We're better to be safe than sorry. So here they are trying to be safe, better to be safe than sorry on economic precautions. And yet it doesn't make sense to them to make regulations that, you know, it's better to protect us from cancer than not to protect us from cancer. Right, if there's, you know, our air pollution deaths or whatever, it's like, shouldn't we be on the precaution side of human health rather than the precaution side of economics?
Right, even though,
by the way, actually, you know, you look at the RGGI states, which have all kinds of cap and reduce policies around climate change emissions, they're doing better economically than not. So even the economic argument doesn't hold. But
well, Scott, there is that. Bad thing that Scott Pruitt has been doing. I noticed earlier today, so I was scanning my social media, and it turns out that Scott Pruitt, I think it was just recently, has taken to himself the authority to make all decisions on the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and has taken that away from the regional EPA directors. So the way it's set up now, there are regions, the country is divided up into regions under the EPA's map of the United States. And I would imagine the EPA regions are sort of linked through geographical and environmental common sense where things are grouped together. So there's a northeast region for the EPA that's centered in Boston, but basically covers most of New England and New York. And it's this kind of method of parsing out the decision making across the country. What Scott Pruitt has done is to say that the director of the regional directors of the EPA, that is to say the guy in Boston, cannot make the final decision on whether or not some project will be killed or allowed forward by the EPA. Right, so if the EPA objects to the construction of a pipeline or something, that usually stops the pipeline, and that decision is made at the regional level by the regional leader. What Pruitt has done is to send out a notice saying, no more, all those decisions are going to be made by my office, by me sitting in my soundproof telephone booth and deciding what across. So we have one man in the United States who is making all the decisions about the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act as he talks to the lobbyists from his office in Washington, D.C. Again, it's an unbelievable travesty. So let me take a deep breath. So Mariah, tell me, what was the interesting thing that got the snake president upset about Scott Pruitt and his real estate dealings? Let's just go to that sort of petty, very human, very money-grubbing thing that Scott Pruitt did in order to. Because that connects back to Enbridge, our favorite pipeline guy, right? So,
I didn't pay a ton of attention to this story because I'm not surprised that that Pruitt is crooked and is taking money and gifts from lobbyists, right? I mean, that's no surprise. But right, he's basically getting a really deep discount on a real estate property in DC, right? He could stay there, and sometimes his daughter was staying there for pretty much nothing. And it was owned, I don't know, as you said, by the Enbridge.
So Scott Pruitt's friend is a lobbyist for oil interests. His wife, the lobbyist's wife, owns this townhouse in a Tony part of Washington, D.C. And oh my goodness, they give to, so in this very richy neighborhood in D.C. They allow Scott Pruitt to stay for $50 a night when he's in town. And they will keep it empty for the rest of the nights that he's not in town. But when he is in town, he only pays $50 to stay in this very nice place. And oh, by the way, his daughter can stay for free. And it's all, he sees nothing wrong with that. So he's getting an incredibly great break on his real estate to live in this nice part of D.C. And the kicker is that the husband of the woman who owns the building, the right, so the wife is renting the thing out to him, the lobbyist husband gets a deal for Enbridge, which is the people that build the pipelines, trying to build pipelines through Massachusetts. They get permission to, again, cross the American border with a pipeline out west. And it's my belief that, remember the trip that Pruitt took to Morocco to try and convince the Moroccans to build more natural gas from the United States? It's the same guy that's driving it, right? It's that company that Scott Pruitt was basically lobbying for. I mean, this, so the real estate thing connects right back into the environmental damage that Scott Pruitt seems to be capable of. So I think that I would just say that if you don't like Scott Pruitt, the thing to do is to tweet your displeasure to tweet it to @RealDonaldTrump, because my belief that Donald Trump will throw Scott Pruitt under the bus in a heartbeat if Scott Pruitt becomes an embarrassment to Donald Trump, because that's the kind of vain, glorious guy Donald Trump is, right? So what you want to do is embarrass our president by his corrupt EPA official, and maybe Trump will go and get at least a crazy anti-environmentalist, but not one that is a sleazebag like, boy, I hope I don't get arrested for this. I hope this still is the United States, at least for the time being. I still have a First Amendment right. Anyway, Scott Pruitt's not on my list of nice people, right?
No.
I won't ask you to say anything in conclusion, Mariah, but I know that I know where your heart is.
I'm with you.
Anyway, we'll put up some links to some of the stuff, but just trust me, there is so much stuff out there right now in the last 48 hours about Scott Pruitt that you don't need to go to massclimateaction.org/blog to get any more links. Just type in Scott Pruitt and your Google inbox will be overflowing with slime and oil sludge. But if you do want to find the Facebook, the link to the podcast, you can find it at Facebook page at /MassClimateAction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, all those things, including Apple Podcast. Please, please, please tell a friend who doesn't like Scott Pruitt either that they should listen to this podcast. That's the way we grow, and more people listening means more climate activists. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration, that is to say Scott Pruitt, not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, Mariah, thank you for listening to my rant. I feel much better now.
Good. Thanks, me too.
Thanks, everyone else, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. And if Scott Pruitt's has resigned by the time you hear this, well, that'll be a good thing. Anyway, bye-bye, everybody.
Very cool.